This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to the show. I'm Julian Ng and joining me is Wong Xiaoning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Zairul K. Johari Penang, DAP Vice Chairman, for his take on Pakatan Harapan's crushing loss in Tanjung Piai. And stay tuned for that. That should be quite an interesting call. In the meantime, Asian markets closed yesterday mostly in the green. Hong Kong was up 1.35%. Shanghai was up 0.6%. Japan, 0.5% up. And both the Singapore and KL stock exchanges were up 0.6%. The only market that was down in Asia was Korea, which was down just slightly at 0.1%.
Meanwhile, over in the US, stocks edged higher to fresh records as investors looked for signs of progress in the US-China trade negotiations. The S&P 500, Dow and Nasdaq all fluctuated throughout the day, but ended up on a positive note, extending gains from last week when White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow had said that China and US-China talks were nearing the final stages. As a result, the S&P 500 was up marginally 0.05% and the Dow and Nasdaq were up 0.1%.
And also over in the US, Jay Powell stuck it to Donald Trump. The chairman of the Federal Reserve told Donald Trump that they would continue to make monetary policy in a non-political manner. This means that the Fed would be dictated by the twin goals of stable inflation as well as maximum employment.
Now, this was said in a meeting that followed months of criticism by the US president for not implementing looser monetary policy. In Trump's speech to the Economic Club of New York, he had accused the Fed of restraining growth during his tenure. The president added that the Fed had put the US at a disadvantage for not following the Eurozone by actually having negative interest rates. Now, the meeting came after Jerome Powell testified twice before Congress on the economy and the outlook of the interest rates.
I think this comes amid a lot of calls from political thinkers as well as central bankers all over the world that governments around the world have got to do more fiscal policy, have to do more government spending rather than just relying on interest rates to pump up the economy. Where do you draw the line on independence, right? Because when governments do that, they would themselves be influencing economic policy, which is actually their job.
Yeah, but for me, for sure, I think a monetary policy should be left alone to central bankers and the government shouldn't interfere because there has to be some check and balance, right? You can't have government dictating interest rate direction and also then dictating how they spend the money. So, someone has to manage things separately. And I think, if anything, the central bankers, because they're not kind of politicians, they're not voted in, right? They can actually take a longer view, look at things more holistically, have a longer time horizon when they manage the economy versus a politician, right? Because a politician is keen on public perception, economic growth today or maybe next year, especially for when we head into the 2020 elections. So what do you want? You want the Dow Jones, the Nasdaq to be at all-time high. You want maybe at that current juncture, unemployment numbers to be very low, wage growth to be increasing. But the pain of that might come later, right? In 3 to 4, 5 years later. But who's going to pay the price? By then, you're in the White House. It doesn't matter. You're at the end of your second term. Who cares?
Yeah, that's what they call kicking the can down the road, right? For the next president to actually pick up the pieces of what the kind of policy that you have implemented. But still, if governments around the world embark on fiscal policy, that is, governments embarking more and more government spending, they would blur the lines, right, between what they want to do and what the central bankers are kind of doing.
No, but there is a distinction, right? One is monetary policy with regards to interest rate direction, and the other one is fiscal spending, in the sense that you want to know or you want to see how the government should be spending the money to maximize the multiplier effect. So if we bring this example back home, for sure, I think Central Bank Negara should be left alone. I mean, it shouldn't be the government dictating where interest rate direction is. After all, I mean, it is actually Bank Negara who manages things like household debt, a check and balance on how much households are taking up. Because if we don't manage this, it's also going to be a bubble that will eventually burst and it will be very painful. But it's the government's initiative, and they need to see, and they also need to kind of roll out projects, not just projects, but also like, you know, like what projects can be have increasing multiplier effects, yeah. right? So you're talking about transportation, whether it is highway or even development projects, like as on the ground as like schools, healthcare, all that is part of the government's purview. It shouldn't be something that central bankers look at.
Yeah, I think my point is that when the governments around the world spend, they still rely on borrowings, and borrowings would have an element of interest rates, which is the domain of central bankers. But I do agree with you that this kind of interest rates, whether they're high or low, will still instill some kind of discipline on the government to really push them to direction where it's efficient. You know, efficient allocation of resources rather than borrowing without a bottomless pit. In the meantime, another government is also looking at the finances, and this is Saudi Arabia. In the listing of Aramco, they have abandoned plans to formally sell shares to foreign investors. It is now seeking to raise only $25 billion, US dollars, which is a quarter of the $100 billion that they originally sought, because there is not enough demand from foreign investors. They wanted a higher valuation than what foreign investors were willing to pay, Xiaoning.
Yeah, I think originally the Crown Prince was looking at $2 trillion. I think now it's going to come in at between $1.6 to $1.7 trillion. Not only that, they've had to curtail the size of it. So it went from 5% of Aramco to now, I think, only
0.5%.
Yeah, 1.5 actually, because 0.5 is going to local retail shareholders, and another 1% is expected to be sold to Saudi institutions and funds in the region. So yesterday, they announced the scrapping of the London Roadshow. And over the weekend, it was announced that they would also have no roadshow in US and Japan, which basically meant that there were hardly any large insti funds that are going to participate in this Aramco IPO. But FT sources say that the Saudis are looking to state funds from Russia, China, and elsewhere in Asia. And even Petronas was asked whether they were going to participate. They didn't say yes, they didn't say no. As usual, they said, we're looking into it.
Yeah, that's right. I think initially, even the 1.6 to 1.7 trillion was a little bit too steep for foreign investors, and certain issues were highlighted, for example, on whether the government would be able to make decisions independently, because in the past, they have so the sanctity of the contract was at issue, right? In Malaysia, even this is very important in consideration of certain projects like toll roads. Sanctity of contract is very important. How Petronas deals with foreign investors, that is also very important. I think the United States also passed a law that influenced how Saudi Arabia, in particular Saudi Aramco, would do business. And I think this had a certain influence on the demand from foreign investors.
Well, if the pricing was right, if you ask me, I think there's always some demand. But for this particular stock, there's a lot of baggage that comes with it. One of which, of course, is there was a lot of argument that the prospectus itself wasn't very detailed. Some of the oil experts say that with regards to the Saudi's reserves, and it was almost like a pamphlet. It was only 2 or 3 pages, so nobody really knew how much oil there was left. And of course, there's questions of state interference in an oil company like this. And which comes first, shareholder value, maximizing shareholder value, or state interest?
All right. On that note, we have Zariel Kejohari coming up next to talk to us about what happened in Tanjung PI. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.